Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our weekly marriage hour today on Trending, and we're talking everything from dating, relationships, toward marriage, that ultimate goal, 50 years, 20 years, however long you've been married. If you're married, do you ever find that there is a certain point in your marriage where marriage just becomes challenging? It becomes work. Maybe it was from day one. Maybe it's 5 years, 10 years into the marriage. We're going to talk about that today on Trending and practically what we can do. But also, if you're single, we are going to dive in with celebrity and royal matchmaker discussing the trends of the matchmaking dating scene. Why are men getting more picky, and how can we as women be less intimidating to men? Both extremely important topics. So gentlemen, ladies, listen up. Let's get some matches made here today on Trending. If you have a question for our celebrity and royal matchmaker, the number is 1-888-914-9149. You can also ask your question live on Instagram. Just follow me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, where you can also follow Christina Pineda, our celebrity and royal matchmaker. We're going to talk about why J-Lo and Ben Affleck have been trending in celebrity news, and why we mistakenly get the next step wrong when we're trying to take the next step in a relationship. So join me today on Trending during our weekly marriage hours. Would love to take your questions. So Christina Pineda, celebrity and royal matchmaker, is with us. And Christina, I'd love to hear from you some of the latest trends in the matchmaking dating world when it comes to men's attitudes about women.
Yes, so good to be with you, Timory. So last time that I was on, we spoke about how ensuring singles dressing with the opposite sex in mind is very important in matchmaking and dating in general. But this time we are diving into what happens when people are too focused on outward appearances. I'm bringing this up because the past week at Matchmakers in the City, we've had an onslaught of men, especially religious Catholic men, rejecting women based on photos. Just so that you have a little bit of a background on our process and the company, we don't show photos of matches before people go on dates. And we've never done that. Even from our founding 10 years ago, we specifically didn't want that because we know the truth that photos lie. Usually photos are heavily airbrushed. They could be a headshot from 10 years ago, or oftentimes in the case of men, the photos are absolutely terrible. So they don't tell the truth about the person. And we've, from the beginning, said we do not want that as part of our process. Also, online dating is so awkward since people look different from their photos, and we want people to go on a date without preconceived notions of the person, so that it's more of an organic experience. I've even coached people who have told me that in online dating, they created this image of what the person would be like in their minds, and then they always felt disappointed when they met the person in real life, because some people said that they felt so awkward before the date that they had to really push themselves to even go out of their car and walk to the restaurant, since they had this image of someone that they really wanted to meet, but they were nervous that the person in front of them, often the case, which happened, that the person didn't live up to the dream that they had of that person.
Fascinating. Isn't it interesting how we can so easily build up a certain picture of an individual, and that picture can intimidate us? Now, it might be someone we know, and just how our thoughts are preoccupied about that person, maybe even a spouse, can influence the way we treat them and how we comport ourselves around them. But even more so in those most important years when you're discerning and dating and trying to figure out a relationship. So, Christina, tell us a little bit more about how this focus needs to shift for men. In a time when so many people are single, they want to get married, there are incredible, incredible human beings out there waiting to be in the family way, to start a family. Yet there are a lot of roadblocks that we're seeing, such as this pickiness among men toward women, that is getting in the way of that.
Right. And that's why we say, instead of, so we have this photo add-on package that men have been recently doing more often, and they've just been rejecting women based on a few photos. And we know that if they actually met the woman in real life, they would have clicked. But when you have this preoccupation with my time is valuable, and all of our time is valuable, of course, but I don't want to waste my time. So if I can just nip it in the bud in the beginning and just swipe through, then I won't have to deal with a date, spending an hour of my time and wasting my Friday night. One of our clients actually said that to us. He went on a date with this lovely bachelorette, and he had said in his profile that he wanted someone who, you know, wasn't too skinny and who was in shape but not too skinny. But then he went on a date with her, with this woman who was fit exactly what he was looking for, was beautiful, but he said that she was overweight. And then we did a little deeper diving into what he meant by that. So we said, okay, go ahead and send us some photos of your exes. And all of these women were basically looked emaciated. They were so skinny. And we realized, oh, okay, wow. Why are you saying in your interview that you want a normal body when you're looking for stick thin? Mm-hmm. So clearly he doesn't have his priorities straight in what the most important things are when it comes to a match. And that's getting in his way of appreciating the women who he's actually meeting in person.
And it could be very unhealthy in a relationship if he's putting pressure on someone to meet a specific body type as well. Do you think though that the whole size or weight thing for a man is an excuse? It's not really actually about the looks themselves, but it's a reason to not commit or not dive deeper with an individual person they're dating?
I think there's a certain level. I think that I know it's so important for them to be attracted, especially in the beginning of, otherwise they're, because they're the pursuers. So the men have to be attracted. But I think that if they're so picky with things like that, it's going to just be bad for their future relationship. So if someone is in shape, she's slender, that's what you're looking for, that's who you're typically attracted to, great. But you shouldn't be so picky on how much she weighs, or she needs to be stick thin, because she's not going to be stick thin forever. If you want to have children, that shape is going to change.
That's Christina Pineda, celebrity and royal matchmakers from Matchmakers in the City. You can find them at matchmakersinthecity.com. Christina, how can a man listening be open to taking the time to get to know a person, going beyond the body image of the person they're considering dating?
I have a few tips for this, and these might be hard to hear for some men. It was even hard to hear. I read it to my co-founder and sister, Alessandra Conti of Matchmakers in the City, and she was even... It was hard for her to hear some of these, but they're important. So my first tip is for men to get off Instagram. Unless you have a business that requires an Instagram account, it's an unhealthy place for you to be, men. And I know it might sound like a double standard, because I'm not saying that to women, but women tend to have more of that just eye for beauty of just liking to look at friends' photos and things like that, where for men it's unrealistic. If you're having a problem being attracted to women in real life, we need to take that out of your system. And that goes along with number two, which is stop your Hulu / other streamers subscriptions. That was the one my sister thought was intense. But avoid TV, pop culture magazines. They show an unrealistic image of women that is always heavily made up and fake, even though you think that it is real. Most women, when you get older, realize, oh, when I was a young girl and I thought all these women on Cosmo, that was that actually how they looked like. Now I know that's Photoshop. But men don't understand that. So just take it off. As the Lord says, if your eye causes you to sin, cut it off. That's actually not the exact scripture reference, but you know what I mean. Then the third one is take a look at the man in the mirror. Be objective with your own level of attractiveness. Even if you make tons of money, money might help you to get someone a little more attractive, but you can't buy love. You wouldn't want to attract women with your money if you knew the reality. That's important. A lot of people are not they're not objective with how they actually look, and they think that money will change it. And you want someone who loves you. And of course, we can all do things to make ourselves look better and to go for our best. But yeah, you don't want it to be
fake. I want to come back for a moment, Christina, to the first challenge you have for men to get off Instagram, to pull back from social media, and even to, pull back on the consumption of media content in general, from movies to TV shows. That's a really tall order. And I know you mentioned your co-founder and fellow matchmaker, Matchmakers in the City, kind of said, wow, because this is a big one. But I do find it fascinating, and this follows up actually on a conversation we've been having, really a theme all week on Trending, little did I know, but starting with our happy hour on Monday, which you can listen to that episode. It's about escaping your own personal hell. And we're joined by Father Robert Spitzer, and we dive into some of the psychology of the imagination and how it impacts happiness. And what we're talking about is how our imagination, that is, just how we think and ponder things throughout the day and what we think about other people, how our imagination can impact our happiness. But you're also touching on how our imagination can impact how we view other potential people to date or view each other within the context of marriage. And when you're talking about getting off of social media and decreasing the amount of movies and TV shows you watch, you're talking about helping to clear out your imagination a little bit to have more realistic standards for other humans and to give other humans a chance rather than the idea of the very skinny actress standard that you're seeing on television or the imagination of what we create based on edited photos online or even just everyday individuals, not just influencers. We can all edit photos now if we so please.
It's true. They're very easy apps to do that.
So what are a couple of your other tips in the brief few moments we have?
Another one is to quit playing video games that portray women in an unrealistic manner. That's pretty simple. The fifth one is to examine your life and ask, why do I want a wife? And this is what I want that client who I was telling you about before to think about. Is it for arm candy? What kind of wife do you want? Ask yourself these questions. Is she someone who you'd want your future daughter to be like? And if so, what are those qualities that you'd like her to possess? And then you'll notice that some of the other you thought deal breakers that you had might end up not being deal breakers when you start mm-hmm. thinking about these questions. Mm-hmm. Keep going, Timmy.
No, we have a call coming in, Roman from Naperville, Illinois, and he actually has a comment about how he's been brainwashed to look at potential people to marry. Roman, welcome to Trending. What's your comment or question today?
Yeah, hi, Kimberly. I just wanted to make two points. I'm a kind of older bachelor, and I had a lot of pitfalls, and I look back and I see the mistakes I made. It's just from when I was a kid, I was brainwashed by TVs and movies to pursue the head cheerleader, and that she's going to look fabulous all the time. And then the second point is, I really had to learn to look for a girlfriend, a friend, through my mind and my heart, not just my eyes and my less respectable areas. So, those were painful lessons for me, So, you know, just, yeah, you know, I kind of...
Yeah. These are some great insights, Roman. I think that they're important examples and reminders for, you know, sometimes we find ourselves at a place in life, an age in life, and you're like, man, I'm looking back and the influences I had from media to look for that cheerleader type of individual, that head cheerleader, you know, that type of body, that, you know, hair color, skin color, like everything that is supposedly the perfect picture, and to expect that to be what lasts. I mean, this was the impact of the Playboy Bunny. This is the impact of the Barbie culture that we've lived in, that we've put this pressure on women to perpetually look hot and available, and we've put this attitude in men that that's the type of woman you should always look for. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Christina, those last brief tips you have for helping men to overcome this attitude of being picky with possible people and be more open to dating and getting to know people before cutting them out.
Yes, the next one is to stop looking for a girlfriend on Facebook or LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Remember photos lie? And it's really funny because one of our matchmakers was asked out by this doctor on Facebook who looked great in his photos. She didn't know him. But a few weeks later, I got a text from one of my friends who lives in a totally different state. And she saw that he was one of her and this matchmaker's mutual friends. So she asked me about him. She asked me to ask the matchmaker about him. So it was
that's
same
guy. Real social media sleuthing.
Yes, it was the same guy.
Oh,
so
no.
Men, it's creepy. Don't do it. And mm-hmm. It's also, it gives women a creepy vibe if your Facebook friends list or any of your Instagram list, whatever it is littered with only beautiful women. So don't use those online things as tools for dating. Mm-hmm. And the next one, stop online dating. If you're having issues with this, it's these, you know, photos are messing with your head and it's giving you the false sense that you have endless options. You don't. And that's online dating does do that for a lot of people. Not for everyone, but it might be an issue if you're having some of these issues come up. And the last one is to get in person, go to in-person events and approach women, even if you normally wouldn't find them attractive.
That's celebrity and royal matchmaker Christina Pineda helping us lowly peasants to figure out the dating relationship scene. We're going to come back during our weekly marriage hour to talk about how to be less intimidating to men if you're a woman and when marriage becomes work. We'll be right back.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's our weekly marriage hour today on Trending. This is for you if you're single, if you're married. Gain the tips and wisdom for a future marriage or a current marriage, even if you're single. We want to talk in just a little bit about when marriage becomes work, when it becomes difficult. Maybe you hit this point in your marriage where you're like, things aren't as easy or as fun, or we don't communicate as well as we used to. What do you do? Well, we'll talk about that with some great answers and tips later here on Trending. We'll also talk about the confusion we make in our relationships when we get confused about what the next step should be. We'll talk about Ben Affleck and J-Lo and why they've been trending in the celebrity world. But before we go there, joining me now is celebrity and royal matchmaker Christina Pineda. And a trend that she's seen in the matchmaking and dating world lately has had to do with intimidating women, which Christina, I find this absolutely fascinating because I remember, you know, after I've been married and, you know, some of us were getting together after college, one person said, oh yeah, I always wanted to ask you out. And I was like, why didn't you? And they commented, well, you were always doing something and that was intimidating. And I thought it was the weirdest thing I had heard. I was so like bummed that, you know, just in general that someone finds someone who's busy or at a various state in their life as intimidating to ask out. But this has become a real problem. What's going on? How do we fix it?
Right. Yeah. And I guess in that case, I'm glad, because often if someone is too intimidated to ask someone out, it's a sign that, okay, you're not the right person. If you can't handle that someone has a lot going on in her life and is passionate about things. And that's the good kind of intimidating, because it sends the wrong men away. However, there is a kind of intimidating that women can avoid. And my sister actually spoke at a junior league event 2 weeks ago, and a lot of the women there were confessing that men are generally intimidated by them. So what we were saying, and we talked about it a little bit, and what we think women can avoid is just the way that you talk about your success and talk about your career, that instead of saying it in a way of bragging about the home that you just bought or having a top earning career, that you focus on him when you're dating, focus on the man when you're dating, treasure those accomplishments in your heart, and then little by little, explain it in a way that shows your excitement to share this with him, as opposed to saying that you're better than anyone. And I think it's hard to do because often we want to shout to the rooftops about the amazing successes we have. And we're not saying that you shouldn't be proud and happy and joyful about it. But there's one way of saying it where we had a bachelorette who went on a date, and one of the first things she said is, "Yeah, I'm one of the top earners in my company." That is intimidating in a bad way. Mm-hmm. But we've had many other bachelorettes who have been extremely successful in their career, but are just really loving and engaging and warm on the dates. And it might come up something about your, "Oh yeah, I really enjoy this about my career." But that says it in a way that the right man is going to think, "Wow, she's passionate about her career. I like that." We have so many men who come to us looking for a woman who is passionate about something in her life and who is, you know, who's intelligent, who's doing fun things, who's doing interesting work, who's, yeah, just going for the things that the Lord has called her to do. Most men are attracted to that. But it's the way that you situate it, the way that you explain it, that's the most important way, the important thing about this.
That is so fascinating because we're seeing in general as a society, men are later bloomers than women. You know, and we're seeing women are perhaps a little more self-assured in achieving maybe a little quicker in their career. It's taking men a little longer to catch up. And again, that's not something offensive to say. It's just a fact. You know, we've talked before about why that's happened. We'll include a link in the podcast notes to where we talk about men being late bloomers, because I think that conversation is really important. Mm-hmm. But when maybe you're a woman and you own a house, I actually have a friend, she owns a house, she runs her own business. And I remember a couple of my guy friends said, like, "I would never ask her out." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because she's got a house, she's got her own business. That's intimidating. Like, I'm not at that level. I would feel like I'd have to catch up before I was worthy of her." And so this intimidation thing also has to do with the deep-seated desire and gift and God-given mission for men to lead, protect, and provide. So perhaps if you're a man desiring to do all those things, how do you reconcile with perhaps a woman who might be making more or who has been a little further ahead without shutting down the conversation, the potential in that relationship?
Right. And that takes humility on men's part too. That, yeah, this is a woman who has a lot going on, but it doesn't make you less of a man that she does. And is this a woman who I could see myself raising children with? Does she have the qualities that I want? Is faith the center of her life? Is she living out her faith with her whatever career she is in? Because careers can be demanding. So how is she balancing that? So instead of looking at it in a way of a competition, because men tend to be competitive, don't look at women in that sense of competition. Look at her in that way that we framed in the beginning of, do I want my future daughter to be like this woman? Mm-hmm. And how can I just maybe take a little bit of more of a humble side of this? And if she's so advanced, and not measure myself up to her, but know she has certain qualities, I have certain qualities. Let's see if this is something that she's the woman who God wants me to raise a family with.
And I always think of the example of St. Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary when we talk about this model for humility within the context of dating, relationships, and marriage, that we know St. Joseph said nothing in the written word of sacred scripture. Like, while he did speak in his life, there's nothing written of what he said. What we saw was a man of action, of humility, of intentionality. And in Our Lady, we saw, you know, anything she said was a yes to the will of God, or an act of faith in the will of God. The very last thing she says in all of sacred scripture are, do whatever he tells you, at the wedding feast in Cana. And the very first thing she says in sacred scripture is, how can this be? You know, this moment of humility that God is choosing her to be the mother of God, of Jesus Christ. That humility should lead us to an example of how sometimes in relationships, yes, we are relational human beings, but sometimes we don't have to say so much about ourselves or always defend our own opinion or always make ourselves sound so important. And that's a virtue in and of itself. It requires a virtue.
That's true. And that's what I talked, why I was bringing up the treasuring your accomplishments in your heart, because that's what Our Lady did. She treasured when people were visiting Our Lord Jesus when he was born. She treasured these things in her heart. And she wasn't shouting to the rooftops that my son is the Messiah. She was keeping these things. And there's a joy that comes with that, that no one can take away from you. So I think that's what women can learn from Our Lady as well, that we can embody humility as much as possible and use the Blessed Virgin Mary as your guide. And humility is actually the fruit of the first joyful mystery in the rosary, the Annunciation. So while we're praying the rosary, if you can think about that and bring your dating life into your rosary and start pondering how we can be more humble in certain ways when you're going on dates, and let that inner joy just radiate from within rather than needing to tell the person all about you on the first date, because we also coach people to be go slow and steady when you're revealing information to someone when you're on a date. So revealing things little by little, just like you're peeling the layers of an onion. That's what dating should be, that you're continually getting to know the mystery of that other person little by little.
And isn't that the great gift of relationships, that we as human beings are mystery, the very, depths of our faith, the Eucharist. God is a mystery to be revealed, to be discovered, to be pondered, to be dove into. And this is part of what we should do when we're looking at other human beings, especially of the opposite sex. What we love about the other human being is that they are other, they're different from ourselves. And as a culture tries to destroy the distinctions between femininity and masculinity and the gifts that we have and our identity as male and as female, we have to return to that. And I think that that does play a part in this conversation about how women can be less intimidating to men, that even as perhaps we may be high achievers or successful or, well-managed when it comes to our finances or put together, that we are not usurping or disrespecting the God-given mission and plan for men and women within the context of marriage.
It's true. It's very true. And even in those first steps of dating, it's that plays out. So a few years ago, I wrote an article for Elite Daily about basically how to let men approach you as women, because when we get that comment from women, all these men are intimidated, every man is intimidated by me, what do I do? And it usually stems down to that approaching factor where no men are approaching me. So that's the second problem that comes in with the intimidation. And the thing with approach is a lot of men right now have something called approach anxiety, where they're afraid to approach women. It could be because they've gotten turned down and rejected by women in the past when they've done that. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that a lot of women do, if a man approaches them, aren't that nice, especially when you're going out and you just don't know the person. So as a woman, it's a little bit, ah, someone's approaching me. I don't know this person. But one of the ways to be more approachable as a woman is to be more gracious when someone actually does come up to you, even if you don't think they're your future husband or they're attractive, or you think, ew, who is this guy? I don't know him. Just be nice, be polite, make some small conversation, even if you really would rather not be talking to him, because then other men, even if this man isn't a good fit for you, other men will see that you are kind and they won't be as afraid to approach you. That's one of the tips to encourage men to come to you first, and you don't have to complain that no men approach you, because they will. It's just often women have this, they have this thing called the RBF face. I don't know if you've heard of this
too. Yes. Yes, it is real. It's real. You can't sometimes help the resting position of your face. And sometimes it gives off real witchy, I guess we shall say, vibes for some people. But, you know, it's whether it's RBF or even if it's that power pose that women are told to have in the business world, you know, kind of show and take up all the space in the room and put your hands on your hips. There's nothing wrong with that if you need it in situations, but in dating, perhaps, you know, you don't need that confrontational, powerful approach. We should be confident and comported, not intimidating and domineering as women.
It's true. It's true. And to smile more. That's always a way to soften the, because we all have stressors throughout the day, but when you're going out, when you're going to events, I've talked to Timory on this show about going to events, how important that is. The Young Catholic Professionals Conference coming up, all of this, you can take these tips and use them while you're there, but smile more, talk to people, even if that's not typically your personality. Go and start conversations with people, make new female friends as a woman, even just talk to some guys. You don't have to be extremely attracted to the person to just strike up conversations and see where it leads.
That's celebrity and royal matchmaker Christina Pineda. Find her at matchmakersinthecity.com. We've also tagged her on social media. So find her, follow me on Instagram at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I'll be right back talking about when marriage becomes work, what we can do.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's our weekly marriage hour. If you have a question, dating, relationships, we'd be happy to take it. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We're going to talk about why we mistakenly get the next step wrong in relationships and why J-Lo and Ben Affleck have been trending in celebrity news. But before we go there, I want to talk about when marriage starts to be work, when it starts to become more difficult. Maybe you find, you know, the fun that you used to have isn't there. Maybe you're resenting your spouse. You're frustrated with your spouse. You know, anger is harboring. I was recently listening to a priest who said, for many women, as years go by in marriage, women for some reason become increasingly angry. And I thought that was a fascinating comment, that we can either become more virtuous, or we could start to hold resentment and animosity. You know, we were talking about RBF, that resting bleep face that some of us have. And if you have that, you know, how easy it is in general to kind of allow yourself to not just have the RBF, but to also have an attitude that is just grumpy or angry. And there's so many things that happen in marriage. I've been thinking about this a lot, especially lately. My husband and I have been married 3 years. And, you know, as things start to happen with the coming and going with our kid and, you know, work and, you know, buying a new house and, you know, bathing and all the things that come up with cleaning up after dinner, I've realized recently, we've been talking about this, we're at a point where our marriage is taking more intention and in a different way than we were used to before. And it's a moment of challenge. It's a moment of, okay, what are we going to do with this? Am I going to leave myself feeling a little frustrated? Am I going to leave myself not having a lot of time together? And I've seen this with so many wise people before me where they've had so many profound tips for how to make a marriage last, to how to have a healthy marriage. And we hear it everywhere from the saints to psychologists and therapists to priests, spiritual counselors, to seasoned married couples. And I want to kind of ponder a couple ideas on this front. I think that two interesting facts came to mind that were really making me think about how we can be more intentional in our marriage when marriage starts to become difficult, when it starts to become work. And first is a fascinating statistic that came out from a study from the University of Kansas. And what it showed is in order for you to progress in a friendship from knowing someone as an acquaintance into becoming a casual friend, to a simple friend, to a close friend, you have to put in hours. And the studies show that you can actually study that relationships progress based on how many hours go in. So let's say you're trying to make new friends. You know, I live in a new area, don't really know anyone, and I realize I need to put in the hours to actually develop some friendships. So if you want to move someone from an acquaintance to a casual friend, you need to put in at least 50 hours together. If you want to move someone from a casual friend to a simple friend, you need to put in a good 90 hours. And if you want someone to be a close friend, you need 200 hours with that individual. I don't know about you, but right away I'm thinking, man, I don't really have that kind of time. But it made me think of this within the context of marriage, that if we're not putting in our hours of fun, of quality time, of good communication, collaboration, if we're not doing all of those important things when it comes to conversations, that the marriage will struggle. And I think that this hour breakdown for friendships is a good example and model for how we need to bring that into our relationships, where we are intentionally planning time to have fun. It might be 20 minutes on a Sunday night after your kids go to bed that you play a board game, and it's a short board game that you know you can play quickly. It might be, you know, my husband and I have been playing, if you've ever played the game Canasta, it's a game where you can play round after round, and one round maybe could take 15 to 30 minutes. Well, what we've done is our goal is to hit 1,000,000 points instead of always just trying to beat each other, which we do, of course, count points because I'm very competitive. We are playing, we're saying, okay, we're going to work until we hit 1,000,000. And so instead of trying to end the game by achieving 10,000 points, we just play one round. And it's a fun, simple way to spend some time together. So I think that, you know, finding time to have fun in simple ways when time's limited, you know, finding time to communicate about those important things throughout the day. How is your day? How am I struggling? But also planning time to talk about important and serious things. And that we're not only always talking about important, serious things when we get together, but we're also actually having regular communication and fun, that these can be a part of our relationship. So the two things I really wanted to ponder when marriage becomes difficult in work, looking at the wisdom of so many individuals and looking at some of the studies, number one, we have to put in our hours. And having fun communicating and talking about important and serious things, all of those things need to happen. We can't just get rid of one or the other. Now, the other thing that I found fascinating is there was a study done by psychologists Dr. Gottman and Robert Levinson. The study was done back in the 1970s. And what the study was is it talked about what's known now as the magic ratio within the context of marriage. And the magic ratio is this. And you don't have to use it only within marriage. It could be with an employee, a staff member, or even a friend or a sibling or a parent, a child relationship. The magic ratio is that for every one negative interaction you have with another individual, that both of you mutually need 5 positive interactions. So the ratio is 5 to 1. For one negative, you need 5 positives. So, and they gave examples of how the way our mind, our body, and our hormones and chemicals of working and functioning as a human being works is that when we receive things such as criticism, rejection, or maybe we're a little afraid of what someone else will think or of how someone will take what we've said, what it shows is that studies have shown that this triggers our fight or flight response, and cortisol levels start to flood us. Those are those stress hormones. And what happens in those situations is that the reason capacity, our capacity to reason, actually begins to freeze up or desires just to appease people. And so what we see is that when negative interactions occur, we shut down. But when positive interactions occur, when we make up for five positive interactions for one negative, this is what the recipe was, according to psychologists Dr. Gottesman and Robert Levinson back in the 70s, 50 years ago, was that for a stable marriage, there had to be this minimum of a positive 5-to-1 ratio, five good interactions for one negative. And this is what they saw, and it was measurable. It was outstanding that they actually saw marriages that were struggling did not have this ratio. They had a whole lot of negative interactions and hardly any positives to make up for that. But the healthy marriages had a minimum of those five positive interactions for every one negative. So in a sense, it's a numbers game. And I find it fascinating because it's so easy when you're married, even if you don't go into marriage, but at a certain point to find yourself in this quid pro quo attitude where if I scratch your back, you'll scratch mine. Hey, I did the dishes, you're going to clean up the floor, right? You know, I put away the dishes, you're going to put the kids to sleep, right? You know, you got home late from work, so you're just going to do everything once you get home. You know, these attitudes that we can have, we like to count the cost of things. Well, what if we changed our perspective? What if we started counting the cost of a negative interaction? And now when I talk about a negative interaction, it could be a criticism I give my spouse. It could be a moment where I felt rejected by my spouse. It could even be a moment where I'm just thinking negatively about my spouse and I'm dwelling on that all day. Even our negative interactions that we have in our own minds about our spouses need to be countered by positive thoughts about our spouse. So how is this done? Well, there were some tips given. I was reading an article at Dr. Gottman's psychologist website by Kyle Benson. He's a relationship researcher. And when talking about this specific 5-to-1 magic ratio, he gave some suggestions for positive interactions. And it included really, really simple things that we can do. It just takes us thinking a little less of ourselves and a little bit more of the people we're around, specifically our spouse. But this could be applied in a work relationship, a parent-child relationship. So he suggested things such as when someone else is talking, actually listening and asking open-ended questions, not pointed questions, to hear their thoughts so that they feel received and heard. Another is just simple things such as being affectionate. You criticize and you got into an argument with your spouse. Well, how about an hour later, you grab your spouse's hand, you hold your spouse's hand for a minute? It was simple things of physical interaction with your spouse. Other things, and I love this one. I remember a dear friend of mine once used to say how when he would get home or walk in the door, if his wife, you know, had a negative comment or, you know, just wasn't in a good mood, that it would just crush him. But he said those days when he'd walk into the door, she had a smile on her face and she greeted him. It was a game changer. Oh, like it would light up his whole life. He had so much more energy. He was game on, ready to go. Even if it was a difficult day and yes, he needs some time or whatever it might be, that it was a game changer for him in his interaction. Look at how simple a smile can be in changing the dynamic. Again, making that 5-to-1 ratio of five positive interactions for every single negative interaction. And there's so many things that we could dive into. In fact, I'll post a link in the podcast notes for today's show to this article talking about some of the things that you can do in your relationship to build up those positive interactions in your marriage. Now, Paul from Gulfport, Mississippi is calling to talk about other ways we can address building up good interactions within our marriage. Paul, what's your comment or question today for trending?
The book, Paul's The Five Love Languages.
Oh, there we go. Yes, sorry, we can hear you now. Five love languages. Yes, share with us about the five love languages.
Right, so that was something that helped me. I've been married a long time, so I'm an oldie. But that was something that I thought as I was listening to your speaker earlier, the matchmaker, and wondering how that might play into people as they begin to look for spouses and you know, the dating scene and how that might impact that. And I don't know, perhaps the speaker's long gone now, but thought that might be something that, that could be valuable in terms of self-awareness and understanding, you know, how you are sort of wired to be loved and how somebody can express that love so that you feel, you know, rewarded that way.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Paul. I know you've been married 36 years and you've mentioned the five love languages have really helped you. I think that this is very helpful. And I know Christine is a huge fan of the five love languages as well. And if you've never heard of them, the five love languages, the idea is, and this comes from the author, Gary Chapman. He's a therapist, psychologist as well. And he talks about how we have love tanks. And if our love tanks aren't full, that is if we're not being loved in the way we specifically need to be loved, that our love tank's going to be empty. And that can negatively impact any relationship, a parent-child relationship, or a marriage relationship. And so we need to figure out how we express love, but we also need to figure out how our spouse or another in a relationship needs to receive love. So the five love languages are summarized in words of affirmations, one, quality time. The third is receiving gifts. The fifth is acts of service. And five is physical touch. There's actually a quiz you can take online. I'll include a link in the podcast notes for today's show, as well as post on Twitter. There's a quiz you can take for the five love languages to figure out what yours is. Now, I find this fascinating. My child was 2 weeks old. I could totally tell she was a quality time kid. I could tell a whole story about that. I won't right now, but I want you to encourage you to check out those five love languages because that's another great tip for helping to build up our marriages to sacrificially love our spouses as they need to be loved, even when perhaps that's not a mode of loving that we're used to. Maybe, well, I like to love by, you know, giving gifts, but my spouse needs to be loved by receiving words of affirmation. If I just keep trying to plow him with gifts, but he needs words of affirmation, maybe I'm giving him, but not enough, or maybe I'm critical, his love tank isn't going to be full. And so these are fantastic tips. I'm so glad, Paul, that you brought up how the love languages has helped you in 36 years of marriage, because these are those fruits, those tools that we need in our marriage to thrive, especially when things start to become difficult. So if you know someone where marriage is starting to become difficult, it's starting to become work, you hear the complaints, this is a great podcast to share with a loved one to help us build up a marriage of culture. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio during our weekly marriage hour. Just a thought, and I want to mention I'm working through that consecration to St. Joseph, and I've invited you to join me and mention that I'd be discussing it throughout the weeks here as we're talking during our marriage hour about becoming that good individual, that virtuous individual to date, or a good spouse. Today in the Consecration of St. Joseph by Father Calloway, the conversation centered around imitating the virtues of St. Joseph and how if you want to become more virtuous, St. Joseph works wonders in the lives of people who have devotion to them and growing them in virtue. We talked yesterday about how St. Joseph is known as the increaser. That's what his name means in Hebrew. And one way to ponder the virtues and to ponder the virtues of St. Joseph and pray for his intercession is by praying the litany of St. Joseph. So I just want to encourage you to pray the litany of St. Joseph and ask for these fruits and these virtues in your own life. We'll include a link to Litany of St. Joseph in the podcast notes for today's show at relevantradio.com/trending. Okay, brief thought, J-Lo, singer, actress J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, and Ben Affleck, have been in the news the last couple of months. And I find it fascinating because there have been a lot of moments where I've seen hashtag relationship goals because J-Lo and Ben Affleck are all over each other and people find it so cute and so romantic. They're not going to see each other for a day and you see public displays of affection. And then you see just over the last week, the news broke that they bought a $50 million mansion together as the next step in their relationship. And this $50 million mansion's in Bel Air. And I kept thinking, isn't it interesting? It's so easy for us to mistakenly get the next step wrong in our relationships. And I want to talk about this a little more tomorrow on Trending to dive into the importance of setting goals in our relationship, just kind of understand why we get the next step wrong and what this has to do with the cultural attitudes about commitment and jumping into things and opportunity for growth. So join me tomorrow on Trending. I'll also be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman to talk about video games. Are they good? Are they bad? How do we moderate them if we have them? Are video games good, bad? How do they impact policing, suicide, aggression among boys? You're listening to Trending with Timory. I'm going to be joined by the author of Assassination Generation, Video Games, Aggression, and the Psychology of Killing. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, and he's going to share with us keen insights into multiple generations now who have grown up on video games. Join me Friday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.